Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends. It's good to see you back for another episode. Sam White Owl, the alleged cryptid hunter who has been sending in letters, has sent me another one. If you haven't seen the past three letters, be sure to go back and check those out before you listen to this one. I guess it doesn't necessarily matter if you listen to them in order or not, but I think it will help you get acquainted with Sam and who he is a bit more. Anyways, I do appreciate all of the support on this series so far. If you enjoy this series, please help me and Sam out by hitting that like button and subscribing if you're new. Before I get into this next letter, Sam did send me a quick excerpt that I'd like to read for you guys. Hey Swamp Dweller, I hope you're doing well. It's been a pretty busy few days, but I was able to finish my fourth letter to you. It's not as long as the third one, but it isn't short either. I've always been impressed with your daily output on your channel. You're able to combine quality and quantity very well. Anyways, here's the fourth letter. If you have any recommendations or anything you'd like to read about for the fifth, please let me know. Hi everyone, it's Sam, back again. I've been really happy with the way these videos are turning out, and with everyone's responses to them. Writing these letters has given me a chance to go back over my old journals, and think about where I've been and what I've done. As I get closer to the end of my days as a hunter, it's been good to look back on my career. I think everyone should look back on their own lives every so often, no matter where you are in life. That's enough reminiscing though. As always, I'll answer a few questions and then get into the monster for this letter. Feel free to skip ahead a bit if you're not interested in the Q&A section. Are some cryptids vulnerable to silver? I believe so. As mentioned in my previous letter, I've dealt with what I believe to be werewolves in Europe. I was advised to use silver bullets before I went, as some European hunters swear by them. So I had some silver rounds made before I went, and oh boy, was it expensive. When I shot the giant wolf with them, the wounds actually appeared to smoke or steam rather than bleed. It was truly bizarre, but I suppose it worked out. There are also other creatures that are vulnerable to iron, such as many of the Fae of the British Isles. They can hardly stand the touch of it. Is copper a reliable substitute for silver? I'm not sure. I've never tried it myself. But a bullet between the eyes usually does the trick, no matter what metal it's made out of. Is it possible for crawlers to group up and hunt bigger game like humans? I guess so, theoretically, but I've never seen or heard of this. Pale men seem to be very solitary, but they must get together to reproduce. And I imagine young ones probably stay with their parents for some sort of time. I highly doubt that they'd ever come together to hunt in groups, though. How many hunters normally go on a job together? It honestly depends. I'd say that I mostly work alone. It's easier to remain hidden when you're by yourself. However, as I mentioned before, I usually try to link up with at least one other local hunter whenever I'm hunting a new creature or when I travel to a faraway place that I don't know well. This especially goes for my jobs overseas and internationally. The most hunters I've ever worked with at once were five when we were going after a group of Kamazats in southern Mexico and Guatemala. How did hunters bring down monsters in the past centuries if such heavy firepower is required to kill cryptids? Well, they had to do it the old-fashioned way, with a lot of effort and a lot of manpower. Old accounts talk about hunters using all sorts of weapons. Swords, spears, bows, axes, clubs, hammers, and you name it. By striking hard enough in the right places, usually the head, they were able to take out their targets. An arrow in the eye or a mace to the head can be just as effective as any modern bullet. It was risky, though, since hunters usually had to get up close to do significant damage. It was brutal and vicious work, and even more dangerous and terrifying than it is today. Do I believe in witchcraft or magic? This is tough to answer, but it has to do with this letter's topic, so I'll try to do my best. I would say that I have seen things that are essentially impossible to explain otherwise, and I believe that behind every legend, folktale, or myth, there is some kind of truth. There are some things that don't seem to be possible without the existence of witchcraft or magic, and in many cases, that is the explanation that has been given for thousands of years. For example, I can't think of any natural way that a human can change their form into an animal. Nevertheless, I have seen the results of these transformations. And since I have no way of explaining this besides traditional knowledge of witchcraft or magic, I try to keep an open mind on the subject. Because of this, I also try to use some of that knowledge for myself. I mentioned before that I carry several personal charms on me whenever I go on a hunt, and I have conducted many different rituals and rites before certain hunts. I consult experts on these things whenever possible. You never want to go in naive. So I've been to native medicines people, Siberian shamans, and East African healers. I trust their knowledge, and so far, it has done nothing but help me. Even if it's only to help me put my mind at ease, many of the things you might call witchcraft or magic do seem to have an effect. Some of my fellow hunters don't believe in any of this, though, but they tend to treat it with the respect that it deserves, nonetheless. And I believe that you can never be too safe. Anyways, that's a pretty good transition into the creature that I'd like to talk about for this letter. This time I'll be discussing the cryptid known as Skimwalkers. This name really should not be spoken, to be honest. In Southwest Native tradition, saying this name or giving these creatures attention will attract them to you. I don't know if this is true or not, but it is for this reason that many Navajo and other natives are very reluctant to discuss skimwalkers, especially with non-natives. Regardless of whether or not you believe me, it's important to remember that many native people, particularly most Navajo, know of skimwalkers and their power. And if they choose not to speak about the topic, then know that they have damn good reason not to. However, I'll be talking about them here because they are very real and very dangerous. And I'd like to do what I can to keep you safe from them. They are pretty rare though, and I can't stress that enough, but it still pays to know about them. To respect tradition as much as we can, hunters usually call skimwalkers either skinnies or just walkers. And we were saying the second name long before The Walking Dead came around, I promise you. So what exactly are these creatures? Well, they came mainly from Navajo myth. But other southwestern nations and tribes like the Ute, Hopi, and Zuni have very similar tales. They have a name in Navajo, which I am very reluctant to repeat, but it starts with the letter Y. Usually, they're found in the southwest United States, but they can travel, and it's hard to track their exact locations. I've never seen any outside of the Americas, though. These monsters are basically witches. I use that term in a gender-neutral sense because both men and women can be witches. At their core, these witches are human. Most were once medicine people and may have been benevolent or good. However, in exchange for dark powers, they decided to commit a terrible crime. By killing a loved one, usually a family member, they became witches and gained a variety of powers that you could consider magical or supernatural. This is how people become walkers. I know, it sounds absolutely crazy, and for all I know, it may not be true. However, these legends go back centuries, and I have seen their results in the flesh, so I have no better explanation for you. The most commonly used power of a walker is the ability to transform into an animal shape by wearing the body parts of certain animals, usually their pelts and skins. They can physically shapeshift into those animals. They can also take on hybrid human form. Most walkers seem to favor canine forms, domestic dogs, foxes, wolves, and especially coyotes. However, accounts also talk about them becoming cougars, bears, eagles, and owls, and theoretically, they could probably turn into any animal. They almost always transform into predators, though. I've never seen or heard of a walker becoming a squirrel or an elk, for instance. This could just be practical, but I think it shows the vicious nature of walkers. Again, I understand this may sound absolutely ridiculous, but until you have seen a walker in their animal form, I don't expect you to understand entirely. Speaking of this animal form, there are often a couple of ways that you could distinguish a normal animal from a walker in an animal form. First, you might just get a feeling that something is wrong, like you're not looking at a normal animal. You might not be able to identify or really see anything odd or strange about the animal physically, but something about it may just feel off. Next are the eyes. Oftentimes, the animal forms of walkers will have oddly human-like eyes. It's tough to explain, but human eyes are usually pretty easy to tell apart from eyes of other animals. If you're looking at an animal, but the eyes seem human, it could be a walker. Vice versa, when they're in human form, walkers' eyes appear more like the eyes of their favorite animal form. Finally, the movements of the animal may seem jerky, stiff, or just unnatural. But I'll say again that walkers are not really common, so if you see any of these signs with an animal, you shouldn't just jump to conclusions. In their human form, walkers are usually very conspicuous. They are usually a lot hairier than normal, and as I said before, their eyes are animalistic. And most obviously, they often wear the pelt, skin, or hide of their favorite animal form, which allows them to transform at a moment's notice. However, walkers have one other ability that can make them a bit harder to pin down. This is the power to influence people. It's not quite like possession, but if they look into someone's eyes for a long enough period of time, then walkers are able to gain a hold of them. According to victims of this, they feel compelled to do whatever they're told by the walker, and it's incredibly hard to fight back or regain control of their own bodies. I've seen this in action only a few times, and I've never fallen victim to it myself, but it is truly unnerving. Walkers can also run incredibly quickly. Many reports speak of them keeping pace with cars on the road, and hunter accounts say that they can cover up to 250 miles in a single night. In both animal and the human form, they are unnaturally fast and agile. Some legends talk about walkers having other powers as well, like causing disease, calling animals, or even raising the spirits of the dead. However, I haven't seen any of these things happen, and hunter records don't usually mention them either. You may be wondering how to get rid of these creatures. Thankfully, there are a few methods of protecting yourself from them and driving them off. And even though it's very difficult, they can be killed. If you go after a walker with just a regular gun and bullets, though, you probably won't make it back to tell the tale. To be successful in confrontations with creatures like walkers, you need to take some precautions that are based in Navajo tradition. Good medicine, or good magic, can act as a shield from dark creatures like walkers. It can even help to kill them, or at least drive them away. My maternal grandmother was a Cherokee medicine woman, and although walkers are not originally from our culture's mythology, we still know about them and have some ways of dealing with them. A lot of these involve ash, you know, the remnants of stuff that was burned. Burning sage or cedar and waving eagle feathers are common practices to help drive away evil and cleanse an area. But to protect from walkers specifically, my grandmother said to sprinkle juniper ash around the area or the thing you want to protect. You can also coat yourself in ash to protect yourself. There are two main ways of actually killing a walker. The first is to speak their true name. This is the hard way of killing them because to do this, you obviously have to figure out their true name. Understandably, this can be very difficult, especially because walkers often live for an unnaturally long time. Their true name may have been hidden over the generations. The simpler way of killing walkers is by using weapons that have been blessed. Blessing weapons usually involves dipping them into white ash powder. For this reason, if I am ever assigned to go after a walker, I take my bullets and weapons to a medicine person and have them all blessed like this. Skimwalkers are among the strongest and most inexplicable cryptids out there. Their abilities are basically impossible to explain without considering witchcraft and magic. And yet, I and many others have encountered these monsters and the things they can do. There are some things that conventional Western science just cannot explain, and walkers are one of them. Because they're pretty rare, I've only had a few experiences dealing with them myself. These mainly occurred in the southwestern United States, in New Mexico and Arizona. I'd visited the area a few times in the past. I think because of my parents, they thought it was important to show me how Native people lived and how different reservations and communities coexisted. So I had taken a couple of trips out to the Navajo Nation as a young boy, even though we had no family there or anything. Nothing unusual or dangerous ever occurred on these trips, but my mother did explain walkers to me. Like always, I was never really allowed to go anywhere on my own, especially after dark. As I grew up and started capital hunting on my own, I occasionally heard tales from fellow hunters about skinnies and walkers. I didn't get assigned to hunt one for myself until I was in my early 20s, though. Sergio told me that some sheep farmers in western border regions of the Navajo Nation were having their animals stolen. The dead sheep weren't turning up with the distinctive blood loss caused by chupacabras, so it must have been something else. Normally, the hunters wouldn't even blink an eye at this. Coyotes and other predators take livestock all the time. But something was off here. Whispers on the reservation were mentioning other strange occurrences in the area. People said they were seeing a strange animal-like figure in the desert at nighttime, wandering around people's homes and farms. As I said before, many Native people, especially Diné people, aka Navajo, don't mention walkers lightly, but that's exactly what the rumors were indicating here. Sergio gave me the job offer, which I was honestly a little hesitant to accept. I didn't know much about Navajo culture or walkers for myself, and I would have felt better with someone else there. Fortunately, there are a few Diné hunters that Sergio said could maybe help me out. He got in contact with one of these people, a hunter named Allison. She agreed to work together on the case with me, and said that she would meet me at the eastern side of the nation. The next day I got into my car and made my drive up there to meet with her. The drive into the nation was beautiful. If you've never been to the area, there are tons of mesas and rock formations, and endless vistas of desert scrubland. It can be a hostile place, but the natural beauty of it can also be stunning. It wasn't long before I met Allison at the designated location. Allison isn't very big physically, but her inner strength more than makes up for any size. It's the kind of strength that comes from living on a reservation your whole life. It's a little difficult to understand if you don't know what things can be like there sometimes. She had her hair braided, with cargo pants and a t-shirt, and a slightly concealed pistol at her hip. She smiled at me as I came up, and her handshake was firm. I think Allison is a few years older than me, but we get along very well, even to this day. We decided to get some more information on our target before formulating a plan, so we drove all the way to the western part of the nation in order to talk to some of the families there. We went to a couple of houses on the first day, just talking to the people who lived there about what they had seen and experienced. I noticed right away that they were all very hesitant to discuss any of those details. I could see the fear in their eyes, but Allison and I assured them that we were here to help them. It definitely helped to have a member of the nation with me, because people seemed willing to speak with Allison after only a little explanation. We collected several stories about a strange shadow that appeared in the night outside of people's houses. People said that it looked like a dog standing on two legs, with pointed ears and eyes that glowed red, even when no light was shining on them. One family even claimed that their youngest child, only 6 years old, had gotten sick after the creature had appeared. Nobody mentioned the name Skimwalker, but it was pretty clear that they all suspected that it was what that was. The most recent sighting had been at the home of a family that was situated some distance away from everyone else. Houses here can be very far apart, and this one was a long way away from any other properties. When we arrived at the house, both Allison and I stopped almost as soon as we got out of our cars. There were scratches around the house's front door. I recognized those as claw marks. A line of ash marked the porch, forming a barrier between the front of the house and the desert outside. These people were clearly being troubled. "The house has been hit," I said to Allison, pointing towards the claw marks. She just nodded and went to the front door, knocking gently. An older man opened the door and hesitated for a second. Allison greeted him in Navajo and exchanged some words with him, and then he let us in. Inside the house were a number of other family members. An older woman, a few younger adults, and several children all came out to greet us. They offered us a seat on a big couch in one of the front rooms, but we politely declined, saying that we would be gone shortly. At first, Allison spoke to them mainly in Navajo, which I don't speak, but she seemed to be trying to reassure them. Eventually, she switched to English and told me that the family would be willing to talk to us. One of the younger men explained that they had been being tormented by something for the past several weeks. He told us a story about he and his younger siblings had been bringing their sheep back to the house from the pasture. When they had passed a hogan — hogans are traditional Navajo dwellings. Their house is made of wood or stone and packed with earth. Hogans are scattered across the Navajo Nation, and although people live in some of them, empty ones can sometimes offer shelter for passerbys or people who need a place to stay for the night. It wasn't unusual for shepherds to put up in hogans for the night. However, the young man explained to us that this particular hogan was off-limits because somebody had died inside of it some time ago. As they had passed it by, though, they heard movement inside. Someone or something was in there. The young man had taken a step closer to see if he could investigate, but all of a sudden, a huge coyote had come racing out of the hogan door, running faster than was physically possible. The animal had almost knocked him over before pausing, looking straight at him and running off into the desert. When he locked eyes with the creature, he said he knew it was pure evil. He could feel that in its gaze. Two nights later, the family had been at home asleep when they heard a disturbing sound from outside. It was the howl of a coyote, which can be eerie enough on its own. However, this howl was distorted, as if it was coming through a human throat. It was as if a human were imitating coyote sounds. This unnerved some of the younger children, and nobody went out to investigate, fearing what might have been outside. In the morning, though, the young man and his father had gone outside to look for tracks, and they had found abnormally large canine footprints. The son said that they had matched the size of the big coyote that had run out of the hogan. Worse, when they went to check on their sheep, they found that they were missing. A lone coyote taking two sheep in a single night? That isn't normal. This was something else. The young man had begun to take his father's old rifle with him when he went out with his siblings and the sheep, even in the daytime. A few more days had gone by without incident, until one night they heard the strange human-like call again. And this time, several members of the family had looked out the window and seen a man dressed in fur coming towards their front door. Then, something about him had changed. Somehow, he had grown larger. He scratched loudly at the front door for a few moments, but then he turned and ran off into the shadows. The next morning, the family had found the claw marks at the door. They had gone to consult the closest medicine woman, who gave them the ash to block off their porch and front door. There had been no incident since, but that had only been a day before Allison and I arrived. After the story, I talked with Allison, and we both figured that the walker might come back to this house. Meanwhile, it was nearly evening, so we had to make a decision quickly. Like a coyote, this walker seemed to be most active at night. We decided to visit the medicine woman and then return to the family's house. They were more than fine with us staying at their home for the night. The plan was to confront the walker when it came there. Thankfully, the medicine woman's residence wasn't too far away from the house, so we were able to get to her place before it got dark. I won't tell you guys her name or location, but I will say that she gave us everything we needed. It took some persuading, but eventually, she realized that we were determined to deal with the Walker. So she had both Allison and I stand in some smoke from a fire for a little while, and then sprinkled a bit of white ash all over us. Then, she scooped up the rest of the ash and put it in a bucket. She handed Allison the bucket, telling us to coat our weapons and our bullets in the ash. We paid the medicine woman in cash. She initially refused the money, but eventually she accepted after Allison and I insisted. She said some Navajo prayers, hugged us both, and then sent us on our way with her blessing and wishes for good luck on the hunt. We returned to the family's house a little after dusk. The family was mostly sitting around their large kitchen table, waiting to have dinner. Despite the large number of people crowded at the table, there were two empty chairs and two full plates waiting for Allison and I. We thanked them and sat down to eat. I don't remember what we had, and I didn't write that part down. I mostly remember being asked questions during the meal. The kids were especially curious. The family asked where we had gone and what we were going to do, and even if Allison and I were married. We answered as much as we could, and I think it made them feel better about the whole situation. After dinner, Allison and I grabbed our weapons from our cars and began to dip our bullets and knives into the ash bucket. As we did this, we decided where we were going to position ourselves. Since Allison was equipped with a pair of night vision goggles, she decided to take them outside, staying near the fenced area where the sheep were. That meant I'd be inside, waiting to see if the Walker would come to the front door again. That meant I'd be inside, waiting to see if the Walker would come to the front door again. We wished each other good luck and separated for the night. I went into the house's living room, where I sat down on the couch and had the best view of the house's front window. From here, I had a good view of the outside, and I'd be able to see anything approaching the house from the front. It was nearly a full moon, so there was plenty of light to see across the desert. It might have been nice to have a night vision like Allison, but I could live with this. Pretty soon, the family was all in bed, and so I turned off the lamp that lit the living room and waited. The night was incredibly uneventful. Besides some normal coyote howls and the wind rustling the scrubby bushes outside, there was nothing of note, really. When the sun rose, I regrouped with Allison, who hadn't seen anything on her end either. Having stayed up the entire night, we were both incredibly exhausted, but the family was very understanding and let us sleep in their living room on the pair of couches. I woke up sometime in the afternoon and found Allison playing soccer with some of the kids outside. I've always been pretty decent at sports, so I headed to join them. We had a great afternoon playing with the kids, who were much better than I had expected. I was able to give them a few pointers here and there, and they picked up on the tips with ease. Allison wasn't too bad herself, and, for once, we both actually got to have some fun on the job. After playing soccer, we were pretty tired, and Allison and I knew we had to rest before darkness fell. The kids wanted to show us some of the cool places in the desert around their house, but Allison and I had to refuse. It was getting late anyway, and the last thing any of us needed was to be outside when it got dark. We headed back inside, and Allison and I both took a quick nap. When we woke up, it was nearly dusk. After having dinner, like the previous night, we went outside to grab our guns, where we had replaced them in our cars. When we went back to the house, we found the older man, the grandfather of the household, standing on the porch with a slim-looking rifle. He nodded to Allison and I as we came up. She quietly asked him something in Navajo. He started to respond, but his voice broke and he quickly fell silent. He looked exhausted, and she put a hand gently on his shoulder. He returned the gesture with a small smile and walked inside with us. I think he had wanted to help, but Allison had reassured him that us hunters would be fine. I remember thinking about the interaction as I took up my spot from the previous night in the living room. The poor man had been so determined to do whatever he could to help his family. I had already resolved that we were going to deal with this Walker, but now I was even more determined to do so. Allison and I reapplied the white ash to our bullets and knives. We were as ready as we could be. I looked out the front window into the dark desert and waited. A few hours later, I caught movement in the shadows. I raised my rifle and looked through the scope, through the window. There was a human figure approaching the house. It was standing slightly hunched over and walked with an odd jerking gait. As it drew close, I could see the fur of the animal pelt on its shoulders and back, and I knew this was our target. I lowered my gun and crept along the floor to the back door, hoping that I couldn't be seen through the windows. I opened the back door quietly and snuck over a short distance to where the sheep were kept. Allison was crouched against the fence there, and I couldn't even see her until she moved forward slightly to meet me. I put a finger on my lips and motioned for her to follow me back into the house to the front door. We crept through the back door. The walker was nearly at the porch now, and I could see clearly that it was a man, dressed in little more than a tattered pair of pants and coyote pelts draped over his shoulders and back. My plan was to wait until he hit the line of ash, and then burst out to take him down with a quick few shots. Allison and I watched in silence as the walker ascended the porch, before stopping about halfway across it. I heard a low, inhumanly powerful growl come from the creature. He stopped at the wall of ash. I realized it was go time. The walker began to howl, and the noise was exactly as the family had described it. It was like a human imitating a coyote's howl, but with enough of the original animal sound that it sounded like an eerie blend of the two noises. Perfect, I thought. I motioned to Allison, she yanked the door open, and I flung myself outside and to the side, crouching down and shooting right at the walker's head. Allison fired from the doorway, and the walker staggered backwards as the gunshots cut through the night. The walker screamed, and the sound was a horrible mix of a coyote's yelp and the pain of a man. As impossible as it seems, smoke started pouring from his head and chest area, which I assume were from the gunshot wounds. I was almost positive that we hadn't missed, but as I watched, the walker leapt backwards off the porch, impossibly fast, still screaming. It was going to take more bullets, it looked like. The monster crouched down, and the smoke pouring from its womb engulfed it. Allison and I kept firing into the smoke, even though we couldn't see our target clearly. Suddenly, from out of the smoke lunged a huge creature, the walker's hybrid coyote-human form. He looked almost like a dog man, but with more pointed ears and a longer snout. The fur was probably the tannish color of a coyote, but we couldn't see that clearly in the dark. His lower body was clearly quite human, though with less fur and clear patches of skin. I had only a few seconds to take this thing in, because he ran faster than I could register and hit Allison. I couldn't even tell if it was a hand or a foot that had hit her, because it was so fast. She was knocked to the ground, and the creature spun at me. In that moment, I had a clear shot and I took it. The walker flinched as he staggered across the ground for some distance in a stilted, lurching walk before collapsing in a heap of fur and smoke. I wanted to go after him to ensure he was dead, but I also knew that Allison was hurt. I decided to check on her first. She was fully conscious and alert, although she was bleeding slightly from her head. She told me not to worry about her, though, and so I quickly ran over to where the walker had fallen. But by the time I got there, all that was left was the smoking corpse of an older man, the same one who I had seen walking up to the house. He was definitely dead, and I breathed a sigh of relief before heading back to the house to tell the family good news. Allison was fine, although she had suffered a slight concussion. The family decided to burn the corpse of the walker, and they thanked us profusely. They repeatedly offered to pay us, but we refused. They eventually settled for giving us each a beautiful turquoise necklace. I still have mine to this day, and although there are still walkers that roam the Navajo Nation, that day there was one less to worry about. I hope this has given you some decent information about skinwalkers. Even though they come originally from Dene lands, they can travel elsewhere. So although I hope you don't encounter one, this story might tell you something about what to do if it happens. But again, they are thankfully quite rare, so the chances of you running into one are very slim. They are truly strange creatures, and they really force us to consider the more magical aspects of this world, which we can often rather not confront. But there are many ways to protect yourself, even if you don't have a hunter around, and even if you don't believe in any of my stories or think any of this stuff is real. Just remember that there are many people who do know what's truly out there, so respect them and maybe learn from them. For now, though, I think this has been enough about skinwalkers. As I said before, many people don't exactly like to discuss them, and neither do I, so we'll finish this letter here and talk about something else next time. I'm thinking we'll talk about either a Wendigo, a deer person, Thunderbirds, or some of my international experiences. But please, let me know if you have any specific creatures you'd like to hear about. And as always, I'm open to questions. For now, though, stay safe and healthy. And we'll talk more soon. This has been Sam White Owl, signing out. Thanks for listening to the fourth letter sent in by alleged cryptid hunter Sam White Owl. If you enjoyed this series so far, please be sure to hit that like button as it really helps us out a ton. If you're new to the swamp, why not subscribe and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you'd like to share in a future video, be sure to submit that at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going. Many thanks again to Sam White Owl for sending in these interesting letters. I don't know what you guys have been thinking about this series so far, but I love learning about these creatures. Whether it's entertainment or truth, both is just so fascinating. If you guys aren't aware, you can listen to this story and any other story on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about anywhere else you find podcasts online, and you can even download them completely for free. If you would like to support the Swamp outside of giving this video a like and subscribing, be sure to check out my merch store. You can find face masks, hoodies, t-shirts, mugs, and all kinds of stuff, and it really helps the channel. Thank you guys so much, and I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.